Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This is WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Well, we've already heard about some of the prospects the Red Sox got in return from family friends. Conspiracy calls about John Henry making a salary dump to reinvest in Liverpool, that this is a Fenway Sports Group move first. Or could it just be that the Sox were sick and tired of dealing with somebody that was non-compliant, didn't have a team-first approach, and was souring the lot in a season where they were starting to just turn things around? The timing is suspicious and curious, especially considering the Red Sox just swept the Yankees, the first team to sweep the Yankees all season long, and on a win streak, getting back to over 500 for the first time in quite a while. Joining us now on the hotline to discuss how and why this could have happened, when it all began, and so much more, someone who has done an awesome job covering the Red Sox and the Rafael Devers drama for Mass Live all season long. You can follow him on the socials at Chris Cotillo. Funny enough, it's actually Chris Cotillo joining me, Dan Ball, and Mego on the hotline. Chris, how are you, buddy? Thanks for making some time.
Happy to. How are you?
Doing well, my man. I think we're all just sort of getting our bearings and recalibrating after having our Sunday night supper, our Father's Days, and whatever else just completely dashed against the wall when we all get that first text from a random friend like Devers to the Giants. Like, you got to be kidding me. It was a shock, but let me ask somebody like yourself who's had his finger on the pulse of this for quite some time, regardless of what time of day it happened, were you at all surprised to hear this happen on a Sunday night following the Yankee sweep?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you work in baseball and, you know, if you work in sports, you know, when these things happen in different sports, and middle of June is not a common time for blockbuster trades. It's not the middle of July. It's not the middle of December. And, you know, the Red Sox were riding high, obviously, after the weekend they had. So it was shocking. You know, I think the timing of it made it even more. You know, I think the best way to put it is on Sunday, June 15th, I was shocked about it. But if you look back over the course of, you know, the last 4 months, 5 months, and you think about everything that's gone on, it becomes less shocking pretty quickly. And I think that's kind of the thesis I've come to thinking about the last 20 hours or so.
Chris, thanks for joining us. When you look back now on that May 9th meeting in Kansas City, where John Henry flies out and meets with Rafael Devers one-on-one, and we hear afterwards that it was a very candid conversation. Have you heard anything more about what the resistance was there, what the communication was, how those two parties left that meeting, and was that kind of the first domino to fall in what we see now as the deal that came out yesterday?
Yeah, I don't think it was the first domino. I think it was one of the last dominoes, honestly. I think when you have the owner fly halfway across the country, that's not a common occurrence. You know, when those guys showed up that day, we were all like, oh, they're here. This, you know, they mean business. And I think it was a last ditch effort to try to get Devers to play first. The communication, I think publicly on it, was super weird because John Henry and Rafael Devers are the principals in the meeting, and neither of them have talked about it, which, you know, that's normal for John Henry and became normal for Devers the last couple of weeks. And there, you know, Craig Breslow was left to describe a meeting that he was not part of, which that was weird too. You know, we don't know what was said behind closed doors, but I think the only assumption at this point was, hey, let's be respectful, let's be candid, we need you to play first base. And Rafi said no. If he had said yes, he probably would have started taking grounders, you know. If he had said yes, he'd probably still be on the team. And so I think, you know, when they say candid, they meant it, because they said, Rafi, you know, I'm the owner. I flew all the way here. I'm paying you all this money. So are you going to do it now? I mean, the only answer is that he just still resisted. And then they got to a point where, you know, the words we've heard the last 2 days at Mass Live reporting on this, unsalvageable and untenable. And that's just where it became. And, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, Rafi and Craig Breslow are getting into fistfights in the home clubhouse at Fenway. But you know, they wanted to move on because they thought it was the best thing for the team at this time. It's a bold move. It's a crazy move. But things get so bad so fast that, you know, they felt like, you know, with the package that was presented and all the money coming off, they felt like it's something they had to do. And so they did.
Can I ask then, since you said this was unsalvageable, basically going back to that meeting that was over 5 weeks ago, crawling into Sam Kennedy's head, like, what do you think he was trying to present when he was on Nesson last week? And he's saying how great it is to see Rafael Devers taking grounders before games and that he's going to basically be there whenever they need him.
Yeah, that was bizarre. And it doesn't seem like there's really a rhyme or reason behind it. I think, you know, maybe he meant down the line in many years. I think the whole taking grounders before games thing was as blown out of proportion as anything I've seen in my time on the beat. I mean, he, you know, went out and was fielding ground balls in the shortstop hole and turning double plays and doing flips. And you know what else? Carlos Narvaez does that at second. And you know what else? Greg Weissert, who's now the setup man, does that at first base. So it's just kind of like, hey, let's hang out, you know, let's be goofy out there and not a getting ready to play in a competitive game. So those comments from Sam, I think the way they were framed too were kind of weird. Like, he's not taking grounders every day. He's definitely not doing it seriously. So, you know, we had heard a couple weeks ago, someone put it point blank, he's not playing defense for us this year. And, you know, I thought that meant he'd be the DH. It means that he's on another team.
Chris Cotillo from Mass Live joining WEEI Afternoons, talking the Rafael Devers deal to San Francisco. So, was it Buster Posey had said that they had been in touch for weeks, actually, that this wasn't just a call in the middle of the night, like I had alluded to earlier on the show, saying like Belichick called and just said, hey, you want Garoppolo for a second? So the groundwork was seemingly being laid for a while. Do we feel like that it was really, Chris, like you had intimated, the attitude of Devers? And had there been any reports of other people of the locker room being an uncomfortable place? Or had you noticed any behavior that was rubbing off the wrong way, let's say, on Meyer, Anthony, Campbell? Because there is such a balance of a youth core in the clubhouse that you would potentially not want to have somebody like that cause a scene in front of them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a, like, you know, an active disdain, or, you know, that he's actively being difficult in the clubhouse on a day-to-day basis, keeping to himself, hitting the ball 115 miles an hour, and just being a guy who loves to hit, was doing his job, was doing it extremely well. And from the beginning, you know, when you talk to teammates, there are some guys, and a lot of former players have come out and said this, from Kevin Millar to Ortiz, that said at the end of the day, you do what's, you know, best for the team. If they ask you to move, you move. And I think there are players on the Red Sox roster who were of that mind the whole time. I also talked to players on the Red Sox who were saying the entire time that, you know, the team really didn't do it right by Rafi on this one. So I actually think they could have handled it better, and I don't blame him. At the end of the day, we're all in control of our own careers. From the beginning, it was one of those ink blot tests where, you know, people looked at it both ways. I'm somewhere in the middle. I see the nuance on both. I see the whole picture. But no matter where you come from, no matter how you look at it, it's a huge distraction, you know, and it was from the first day of spring training or the second day of spring training. And it was, for what it's worth, like a vibes killer. Everybody's excited about Bregman. And then Rafi says, no, I don't want to be the DH. No, I'm not doing it. And that becomes the story of spring training, not Bregman or Crochet's extension or Campbell making the team. It's this lingering Rafi stuff. And for it to resurface in May, I mean, it really did take its toll, I think, from a distraction, drama, something's off type of vibe. You know, I'm not going to get into, you know, the exacts of, you know, what happened or some of the conversations between reporters and players who were upset about the coverage. But what I can tell you is in the month of May, this was a group that was very, very, very keen on knowing every piece of outside noise about them. And that was a little unusual. They had their backs up. It was the way it was. And it was unlike anything I've seen in my time on the beat. And one player put it to me like this, like, hey, you know, things are just tight around here right now. Don't take it personally. And I thought that was telling back then. I think it's telling now that, you know, maybe people didn't dislike Rafi the guy. Maybe they sided with him. Maybe they didn't. I think the big thing is that, you know, there was a distraction. And for a team that's, you know, trying to accomplish the same goal and win games, it was one that, you know, definitely played a factor here in the first half.
Chris, do you have a sense where Cora lands in any of this? Was he part of the decision-making? Was he part of any of these conversations and what his mindset, how he's feeling about this?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, he's in a different place, I think, than Breslow, has a much longer relationship. You know, I think it's one of those things where the Red Sox, from what we've heard, had a pretty detailed action plan on how they were going to present the first base thing to Devers. I think Cora and Breslow asked him to be the DH. And when that went sideways, you know, Cora had to massage and be like, all right, nope, you're my guy. It's all right. No hard feelings. We'll move on. And when they had to present the first base thing, you know, the way the Red Sox wanted to do it is we'll have Breslow do it, be the bad cop. Cora will be the good cop. And if it goes sideways, we'll still have Cora so we don't completely lose Rafi in the process. Of course, it went even more sideways than you could imagine. And, you know, I think Cora probably sees both sides, as a lot of people do. Is he banging his head against the wall saying, I can't believe you traded this guy? I don't think so today. I think he understands, you know, all the factors at play. He looks at the game from a front office perspective because he would like to do that down the line. Obviously, his lineup's going to be worse tonight in Seattle than it was yesterday at Fenway, and he'll have to figure that out. But, you know, the idea of this massive, massive friction between Cora and every GM he's ever worked with, you know, sometimes it's been legit, definitely at times with Heim Bloom. And I'm sure there's been disagreements with Breslow too along the way, but, you know, it's tough to tell because he has, you know, never kind of indicated that he was all in on moving Devers to first, but he also might've been, you know, protecting kind of the brand in the clubhouse by just saying like, he's my DH and playing good cop, like I said.
Yeah, and you got to wonder exactly what this will do for the credibility of management with their own players, future free agents, and more because of promises made, thrifty moves done, deals in the middle of the night.
I mean,
it's just, it's a mess.
Not to interrupt you, but like I see that
please.
A lot. At the end of the day, if you bid $15 million more than the other team bidding for someone, they don't care what happened at Devers 3 or 4 years ago. You know, like that's kind of just money talks at the end of the day. I don't think it hurts. People are saying on Twitter, like, well, now they're never going to be able to extend Anthony or Meyer. Well, if they offer Roman Anthony $200 million tomorrow, I'm sure they'd be able to extend him. So that stuff, I think, you know, it's really case by case. You know, it really comes down to just what a player wants, what his market is at the exact time. I wouldn't say that, you know, there's really kind of that. They're not going to get a reputation based on this one.
Yeah, more specific than an overall umbrella approach for sure. Chris, thanks so much for making some time for us again. You've been doing a great job covering the Devers drama as well as all things Red Sox on the beat for Mass Live this year. You can give him a follow at Chris Cotillo on the socials and, of course, read all of his musings, analysis, and perspective at masslive.com. Thanks again, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And like he said on socials, Mego, when Megan Onalini calls, you pick up the phone and you do the interview. So thanks very much.
Only because I hide my number.
That was great. There's a lot to react to and unpack there. So more of your calls when we get back. See, the lines are loaded up at 617-779-7937. We'll also react to some of the things that...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Chris had to say, and some new news. If you think the Red Sox are having a bad enough day right now, Mego, well, put it this way. Bad news never really goes on strike, especially around Fenway Park. We'll get to all that when we come back here on EEI Afternoons.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.